The magistrate said, "You may go, Professor." "Thank you, sir. May I have my cane?" The magistrate snapped his fingers at the officer, who handed over the cane. "But one thing, Professor," said the magistrate. "If you use that cane again, you had better be absolutely certain you can prove it was in self-defense. Otherwise..." "Yes, sir." And Harry Seldon left the magistrate's chambers, leaning heavily on his cane, but with his head held high. Chapter 20. Wanda was crying bitterly, her face wet with tears, her eyes red, her cheeks swollen. Harry Seldon hovered over her, patting her on the back, not knowing quite how to comfort her. "Grandpa, I'm a miserable failure. I thought I could push people, and I could when they didn't mind being pushed too much, like Mom and Dad, and even then it took a long time. I even worked out a rating system of sorts, based on a 10-point scale, sort of a mental pushing power gauge. Only I assumed too much. I assumed that I was a 10, or at least a 9, but now I realize that at most I rate a 7. Wanda's crying had stopped, and she sniffed occasionally as Harry stroked her hand. Usually I have no trouble. If I concentrate, I can hear people's thoughts, and when I want, I push them. But those muggers, I could hear them all right, but there was nothing I could do to push them away."
"I thought you did very well, Wanda."
"I didn't. I had a fantasy. I thought people would come up behind you, and in one mighty push I'd send them flying. That way I was going to be your bodyguard. That's why I offered to be your bodyguard. Only I wasn't. Those two guys came up and I couldn't do a thing."
"But you could. You made the first man hesitate. That gave me a chance to turn and clobber him."
"No, no. I had nothing to do with it. All I could do was warn you he was there, and you did the rest."
"The second man ran away."
"Because you clobbered the first guy. I had nothing to do with it."
She broke out again in tears of frustration.
"And then the magistrate. I insisted on the magistrate. I thought I would push, and he would let you go at once."
"He did let me go, and it was practically at once."
"No, he put you through a miserable routine and saw the light only when he realized who you were. I had nothing to do with it. I flopped everywhere. I could have gotten you into so much trouble."
"No, I refuse to accept that, Wanda. If your pushing didn't work quite as well as you had hoped it would, it was only because you were working under emergency conditions. You couldn't have helped it."
"But Wanda, look, I have an idea."
Catching the excitement in his voice, she looked up.
"What kind of idea, Grandpa?"
"Well, it's like this, Wanda. You probably realize that I've got to have credits. Psychohistory simply can't continue without it, and I cannot bear the thought of having it all come to nothing after so many years of hard work."
"I can't bear it either, but how can we get the credits?"
"Well, I'm going to request an audience with the Emperor again. I've seen him once already, and he's a good man, and I like him. But he's not exactly drowning in wealth. However, if I take you with me, and if you push him, gently, it may be that he will find a source of credits, some source somewhere, and keep me going for a while, till I can think of something else." Do you really think it will work, Grandpa? Not without you, but with you, maybe. Come, isn't it worth trying? Wanda smiled.
You know I'll do anything you ask, Grandpa. Besides, it's our only hope.
Chapter 21. It was not difficult to see the Emperor. Aegis's eyes sparkled as he greeted Harry Seldon.
Hello, old friend, he said. Have you come to bring me bad luck?
I hope not, said Seldon. Aegis unhooked the elaborate cloak he was wearing, and with a weary grunt threw it into the corner of the room, saying,
And you lie there.
He looked at Seldon and shook his head.
I hate that thing. It's as heavy as sin and as hot as blazes. I always have to wear it when I'm being smothered under meaningless words, standing there upright like a carved image. It's just plain horrible. Cleon was born to it, and he had the appearance for it. I was not, and I don't. It's just my misery that I'm a third cousin of his on my mother's side, so that I qualified as emperor. I'd be glad to sell it for a very small sum. Would you like to be emperor, Harry?
No, no, I wouldn't dream of it, so don't get your hopes up, said Seldon, laughing.
But tell me, who is this extraordinarily beautiful young woman you have brought with you today?
Wanda flushed, and the Emperor said genially,
You mustn't let me embarrass you, my dear. One of the few perquisites an emperor possesses is the right to say anything he chooses. No one can object or argue about it. They can only say, Sire. However, I don't want any sires from you. I hate that word. Call me Aegis. That's not my birth name, either. It's my imperial name, and I've got to get used to it. So, tell me what's doing, Harry. What's been happening to you since the last time we met?
Seldon said briefly, I've been attacked twice. The Emperor didn't seem to be sure whether this was a joke or not. He said,
Twice? Really?
The Emperor's face darkened as Seldon told the story of the assaults.
I suppose there wasn't a security officer around when those 8 men threatened you.
Not one. The Emperor rose from his chair and gestured at the other two to keep theirs. He walked back and forth as though he were trying to work off some anger. Then he turned and faced Seldon.
For thousands of years, he began, whenever something like this happened, people would say, Why don't we appeal to the Emperor? Or, Why doesn't the Emperor do something? And in the end, the Emperor can do something, and does do something, even if it isn't always the intelligent thing to do. But Harry, I'm powerless. Absolutely powerless. Oh, yes, there is the so-called Commission of Public Safety, but they seem more concerned with my safety than that of the public. It's a wonder we're having this audience at all, for you are not at all popular with the Commission. There's nothing I can do about anything. Do you know what's happened to the status of the Emperor since the fall of the Junta and the restoration of, imperial power?
I think I do.
I'll bet you don't fully. We've got democracy now. Do you know what democracy is?
Certainly. Aegis frowned. He said,
I'll bet you think it's a good thing.
I think it can be a good thing.
Well, there you are. It isn't. It's completely upset the Empire. Suppose I want to order more officers onto the streets of Trantor.
In the old days, I would pull over a piece of paper prepared for me by the imperial secretary and would sign it with a flourish, and there would be more security officers. Now I can't do anything of the sort. I have to put it before the legislature. There are 7,500 men and women who instantly turn into uncounted gaggles of geese the instant a suggestion is made. In the first place, where is the funding to come from? You can't have, say, 10,000 more officers without having to pay 10,000 more salaries. Then, even if you agreed to something of the sort, who selects the new security officers? Who controls them? The legislature shouts at each other, argues, thunders and lightens, and in the end, nothing is done. Harry, I couldn't even do as small a thing as fix the broken dome lights you noticed. How much will it cost? Who's in charge? Oh, the lights will be fixed, but it can easily take a few months to do it. That's democracy. Harry Seldon said, As I recall, the Emperor Cleon was forever complaining that he could not do what he wished to do. The Emperor Cleon, said Aegis impatiently, had two first-class first ministers, Demerzel and yourself, and you each labored to keep Cleon from doing anything foolish. I have 7,500 first ministers, all of whom are foolish from start to finish. But surely, Harry, you haven't come to complain to me about the attacks. No, I haven't. Something much worse. Sire, Aegis, I need credits. The Emperor stared at him. After what I've been telling you, Harry, I have no credits. Oh, yes, there are credits to run this establishment, of course, but in order to get them, I have to face my 7,500 legislators. If you think I can go to them and say, I want credits for my friend Harry Seldon, and if you think I'll get one quarter of what I ask for in anything less than 2 years, you're crazy. It won't happen. He shrugged and said more gently, Don't get me wrong, Harry. I would like to help you if I could. I would particularly like to help you for the sake of your granddaughter. Looking at her makes me feel as though I should give you all the credit you would like. But it can't be done. Seldon said, Aegis, if I don't get funding, psychohistory will go down the drain after nearly 40 years. It's come to nothing in nearly 40 years, so why worry? Aegis, said Seldon, there's nothing more I can do now. The assaults on me were precisely because I'm a psychohistorian. People consider me a predictor of destruction. The Emperor nodded. Your bad luck, Raven Seldon. I told you this earlier. Seldon stood up wretchedly. I'm through, then. Wanda stood, too, next to Seldon, the top of her head reaching her grandfather's shoulder. She gazed fixedly at the Emperor. As Harry turned to go, the Emperor said, Wait. Wait, there's a little verse I once memorized. Ill fares the land, to hastening ills a prey, where wealth accumulates and men decay. What does it mean? Asked a dispirited Seldon. It means that the Empire is steadily deteriorating and falling apart, but that doesn't keep some individuals from growing rich. Why not turn to some of our wealthy entrepreneurs? They don't have legislators, and can, if they wish, simply sign a credit voucher. Seldon stared. I'll try that. Chapter 22. Mr. Bindris, said Harry Seldon, reaching out his hand to shake the others, I am so glad to be able to see you. It was good of you to agree to see me. Why not? Said Tarrant Bindris jovially. I know you well, or rather, I know of you well. That's pleasant. I take it you've heard of psychohistory, then. Oh, yes. What intelligent person hasn't? Not that I understand anything about it, of course. And who is this young lady you have with you? My granddaughter, Wanda. A very pretty young woman. He beamed. Somehow I feel I'd be putty in her hands. Wanda said, I think you exaggerate, sir. No, really. Now, please, sit down and tell me what it is I can do for you. He gestured expansively with his arm, indicating that they be seated on two overstuffed, richly brocaded chairs in front of the desk at which he sat. The chairs, like the ornate desk, the imposing carved doors, which had slid back noiselessly at their arrival signal, and the gleaming obsidian floor of Bindris's vast office were of the finest quality. And although his surroundings were impressive and imposing, Bindris himself was not. The slight, cordial man would not be taken at first glance for one of Trantor's leading financial power brokers. We're here, sir, at the Emperor's suggestion. The Emperor? Yes. He could not help us, but he thought a man like you might be able to do so. The question, of course, is credits. Mindris's face fell. Credits? He said. I don't understand. Well, said Seldon, for nearly 40 years, psychohistory has been supported by the government. However, times change, and the Empire is no longer what it was. Yes, I know that. The Emperor lacks the credits to support us. Or even if he did have the credits, he couldn't get the request for funding past the legislature. He recommends, therefore, that I see business people who in the first place still have credits, and in the second place can simply write out a credit voucher. There was a longish pause, and Bindris finally said, The Emperor, I'm afraid, knows nothing about business. How many credits do you want? Mr. Bindris, we're talking about an enormous task. I'm going to need several million. Several million? Yes, sir. Bindris frowned. Are we talking about a loan here? When do you expect to be able to pay it back? Well, Mr. Bindris, I can't honestly say I ever expect to be able to pay it back. I'm looking for a gift. Even if I wanted to give you the credits, and let me tell you, for some strange reason I very much want to do so, I couldn't. The Emperor may have his legislature, but I have my board members. I can't make a gift of that sort without the board's permission, and they'll never grant it. Why not? Your firm is enormously wealthy. A few million would mean nothing to you. That sounds good, said Bindris. But I am afraid that the firm is in a state of decline right now. Not sufficiently to bring us into serious trouble, but enough to make us unhappy. If the Empire is in a state of decay, different individual parts of it are decaying too. We are in no position to hand out a few million. I'm truly sorry. Seldon sat there silently, and Bindris seemed unhappy. He shook his head at last and said, Look, Professor Seldon, I would really like to help you out, particularly for the sake of the young lady you have with you. It just can't be done. However, we're not the only firm in Trantor. Try others, Professor. You may have better luck elsewhere. Well, said Selden, raising himself to his feet with an effort, we shall try. Chapter 23. Wanda's eyes were filled with tears, but the emotion they represented was not sorrow, but fury. Grandpa, she said, I don't understand it. I simply don't understand it. We've been to 4 different firms. Each one was ruder and nastier to us than the one before. The 4th one just kicked us out. And since then, no one will let us in. It's no mystery, Wanda, said Selden gently. When we saw Bindris, he didn't know what we were there for, and he was perfectly friendly until I asked for a gift of a few million credits. Then he was a great deal less friendly. I imagine the word went out as to what we wanted, and each additional time there was less friendliness, until now when people won't receive us at all. Why should they? They're not going to give us the credits we need, so why waste time with us? Wanda's anger turned on herself. And what did I do? I just sat there. Nothing. I wouldn't say that, said Selden. Bindris was affected by you. It seems to me that he really wanted to give me the credits, largely because of you. You were pushing him and accomplishing something. Not nearly enough. Besides, all he cared about was that I was pretty. Not pretty, muttered Selden. Beautiful. Very beautiful. So what do we do now, Grandpa? Asked Wanda. After all these years, psychohistory will collapse. I suppose that, said Selden, in a way it's something that can't be helped. I've been predicting the breakdown of the Empire for nearly 40 years, and now that it's come, psychohistory breaks down with it. But psychohistory will save the Empire, at least partly. I know it will, but I can't force it to. Are you just going to let it collapse? Selden shook his head. I'll try to keep it from doing so, but I must admit that I don't know how I'm going to do it. Wanda said, I'm going to practice. There must be some way I can strengthen my push, make it easier for me to force people to do what I want them to do. I wish you could manage. What are you going to do, Grandpa? Well, nothing much. 2 days ago, when I was on my way to see the chief librarian, I encountered 3 men in the library who were arguing about psychohistory. For some reason, one of them impressed me very much. I urged him to come see me, and he agreed. The appointment is for this afternoon at my office. Are you going to have him work for you? I would like to, if I have enough credits to pay him with. But it can't hurt to talk with him. After all, what can I lose? Chapter 24. The young man arrived at precisely 4 TST, Trantorian Standard Time, and Selden smiled. He loved punctual people. He placed his hands on his desk and made ready to heave to his feet, but the young man said, Please, Professor, I know you have a bad leg. You needn't stand up. Selden said, Thank you, young man. However, that does not mean that you cannot sit down. Please do. The young man removed his jacket and sat down. Selden said, You must forgive me. When we met and set up this appointment, I neglected to learn your name, which is...
Stettin Palver, said the young man.
Ah, Palver. Palver. The name sounds familiar.
It should, Professor. My grandfather boasted frequently of having known you.
Your grandfather?
Of course, Joramus Palver. He was 2 years younger than I was, as I recall. I tried to get him to join me in psychohistory, but he refused. He said there was no chance of his ever learning enough mathematics to make it possible. Too bad. How is Joramus, by the way?
Palver said solemnly, I'm afraid that Joramus has gone the way of old men generally. He's dead.
Selden winced. 2 years younger than he himself was, and dead. An old friend, and they had lost touch to such a degree that when death came, it did so unknowingly.
Selden sat there for a while and finally muttered, I'm sorry.
The young man shrugged. He had a good life.
And you, young man, where did you have your schooling?
Langano University.
Selden frowned. Langano? Stop me if I'm wrong, but that's not on Trantor, is it?
No, I wanted to try a different world. The universities on Trantor, as you undoubtedly know very well, are all overcrowded. I wanted to find a place where I could study in peace.
And what did you study?
Nothing much. History. Not the sort of thing that would lead one to a good job.
Another wince, even worse than the first. Doris Venevoli had been a historian.
Selden said, But you're back here on Trantor. Why is that?
Credits? Jobs?
As an historian?
Palver laughed. Not a chance. I run a device that pulls and hauls. Not exactly a professional occupation.
Selden looked at Palver with a twinge of envy. The contours of Palver's arms and chest were highlighted by the thin fabric of his shirt. He was well muscled. Selden had never himself been quite that muscular.
Selden said, I presume that when you were at the university, you were on the boxing team.
Who, me? Never. I'm a twister.
A twister?
Selden's spirits jumped. Are you from Helicon?
Palver said with a certain contempt, You don't have to come from Helicon to be a good twister.
No, thought Selden. But that's where the best ones come from. However, he said nothing.
He did say, though, Well, your grandfather would not join me. How about you?
Psychohistory?
I heard you talking to the others when I first encountered you, and it seemed to me that you were talking quite intelligently about psychohistory. Would you like to join me then?
As I said, Professor, I have a job.
Pushing and hauling. Come, come.
It pays well.
Credits aren't everything.
They're quite a bit. Now you, on the other hand, can't pay me much. I'm quite certain that you're short of credits.
Why do you say that?
I'm guessing, in a way, I suppose. But am I wrong?
Selden's lips pressed together hard. Then he said, No, you're not wrong, and I can't pay you much. I'm sorry. I suppose that ends our little interview.
Wait, wait, wait.
Palver held up his hands. Not quite so fast, please. We're still talking about psychohistory.
If I work for you, I will be taught psychohistory, right?
Of course.
In that case, credits aren't everything after all. I'll make you a deal.
You teach me all the psychohistory you can, and you pay me whatever you can, and I'll get by somehow. How about it?
Wonderful, said Selden joyously. That sounds great. Now, one more thing.
Oh?
Yes. I've been attacked twice in recent weeks. The first time, my son came to my defense, but he has since gone to Santani. The second time, I made use of my lead-filled walking stick. It worked, but I was dragged before a magistrate and accused of assault and battery.
Why the attacks?
Interjected Palver.
I am not popular. I have been preaching the fall of the Empire for so long that, now that it is coming, I'm blamed for it.
I see. Now then, what does all that have to do with the one more thing you mentioned?
I want you to be my bodyguard. You're young, you're strong, and most of all, you're a twister. You're exactly what I need.
I suppose it can be managed, Palver said with a smile.
Chapter 25. See there, Stettin, Selden said as the two were taking an early evening stroll in one of Trantor's residential sectors near Streeling. The older man pointed to debris, assorted refuse jettisoned from passing ground cars or dropped by careless pedestrians strewn along the walkway. In the old days, Selden continued, you would never see litter like this. The security officers were vigilant, and municipal maintenance crews provided round-the-clock upkeep of all public areas. But most important, no one would even think of dumping his trash in such a manner. Trantor was our home. We took pride in it. Now,
Selden shook his head sadly, resignedly, and sighed.
He broke off abruptly.
You there, young man, Selden shouted at an ill-kempt fellow who had moments before passed them going in the opposite direction.
He was munching a treat just popped into his mouth. The wrapper had been tossed to the ground without so much as a downward glance.
Pick that up and dispose of it properly, Selden admonished as the young man eyed him sullenly.
Pick it up yourself, the boy snarled. And then he turned and walked away.
It's another sign of society's breakdown, as predicted by your psychohistory, Professor Selden, Palver said.
Yes, Stettin. All around us, the Empire is falling apart, piece by piece. In fact, it's already smashed. There's no turning back now. Apathy, decay, and greed have all played their parts in destroying the once glorious Empire. And what will take its place? Why?
Here Selden broke off at the sight of Palver's face. The younger man seemed to be listening intently, but not to Selden's voice. His head was cocked to one side, and his face had a far-off look. It was as if Palver were straining to hear some sound inaudible to everyone but himself. Suddenly, he snapped back to the here and now. With an urgent glance around them, Palver took hold of Selden's arm.
Harry, quick! We must get away. They're coming.
And then the still evening was broken by the harsh sound of rapidly approaching footsteps. Selden and Palver spun around, but it was too late. A band of attackers was upon them. This time, however, Harry Selden was prepared. He immediately swung his cane in a wide arc around Palver and himself. At this, the three attackers, two boys and a girl, all teenage ruffians, laughed.
"So you're not going to make it easy, are you, old man?" snorted the boy who appeared to be the group's ringleader. "Why, me and my buddies will take you out in 2 seconds flat. We'll..."
All of a sudden, the ringleader was down, the victim of a perfectly placed twist kick to his abdomen. The two ruffians who were still standing quickly dropped to a crouch in preparation for attack. But Pelver was quicker. They too were felled almost before they knew what hit them. And then it was over, almost as soon as it started. Selden stood off to the side, leaning heavily on his cane, shaking at the thought of his narrow escape. Pelver, panting slightly from exertion, surveyed the scene. The three attackers were out cold on the deserted walkway under the darkening dome.
"Come on, let's get out of here quickly," Pelver urged again.
Only this time it was not the attackers they would be fleeing.
"Stettin, we can't leave," protested Selden.
He gestured toward the unconscious would-be muggers. "They're really nothing more than children. They may be dying. How can we just walk away?
It's inhumane. That's what it is, and humanity is exactly what I've been working all these years to protect."
Selden struck the ground with his cane for emphasis, and his eyes gleamed with conviction.
"Nonsense," retorted Pelver. "What's inhumane is the way muggers like that prey on innocent citizens like you. Do you think they'd have given you a second thought? They'd just as soon stick a knife in your gut to steal your last credit, and then kick you as they ran. They'll come to soon enough and slink away to lick their wounds. Or someone will find them and call the central office. But Harry, you must think. After what happened last time, you stand to lose everything if you're linked to another beating. Please, Harry, we must run."
With this, Pelver grabbed Selden's arm, and Selden, after a last backward glance, allowed himself to be led away. As the footsteps of the rapidly departing Selden and Pelver diminished in the distance, another figure emerged from his hiding place behind some trees. Chuckling to himself, the sullen-eyed youth muttered,
"You're a fine one to tell me what's right and what's wrong, Professor."
With that, he spun on his heel and headed off to summon the security officers. Chapter 26.
"Order? I will have order,"
bellowed Judge Tehan Popkins Lee. The public hearing of Professor Raven Selden and his young associate, Stettin Pelver, had generated a hue and cry among the populace of Trantor. Here was the man who had predicted the fall of the Empire, the decay of civilization, who exhorted others to hearken back to the golden age of civility and order. Here was he, who, according to an eyewitness, had ordered the brutal beating of three young Trantorians for no apparent provocation. Ah, yes, it promised to be a spectacular hearing, one which would lead, no doubt, to an even more spectacular trial. The judge pressed a contact set into a recessed panel on her bench, and a sonorous gong resounded through the packed courtroom.
"I will have order," she repeated to the now hushed throng. "If need be, the courtroom will be cleared. That is a warning. It will not be repeated."
The judge cut an imposing figure in her scarlet robe. Originally from the outer world of Lystina, Lee's complexion had a slight bluish cast, which turned darker when she became exercised, practically purple when she was really angry. It was rumored that for all her years on the bench, in spite of her reputation as a top judicial mind, notwithstanding her position as one of the most revered interpreters of imperial law, Lee was ever so slightly vain about the colorful appearance she gave, the way in which the bright red robes set off her soft turquoise skin. Nevertheless, Lee had a reputation for coming down hard on those who brooked imperial law. She was one of the few judges left who upheld the civil code without wavering.
I have heard of you, Professor Selden, and your theories about our imminent destruction. And I have spoken with the magistrate who recently heard another case in which you were involved, one in which you struck a man with your lead-filled cane. In that instance, too, you claimed to be the victim of assault. Your reasoning stemmed, I believe, from a previous unreported incident in which you and your son allegedly were assaulted by 8 hoodlums. You were able to convince my esteemed colleague, Professor Selden, of your plea of self-defense, even though an eyewitness testified otherwise. This time, Professor, you will have to be much more convincing.
The 3 hoodlums who were bringing charges against Selden and Palver snickered in their seats at the plaintiff's table. They presented a much different appearance today than they had the evening of the attack. The young men were sporting clean, loose-fitting unisuits. The young lady was wearing a crisply pleated tunic. All in all, if one didn't look, or listen, too closely, the 3 presented a reassuring picture of Trantorian youth. Selden's lawyer, Siv Novker, who was representing Palmer as well, approached the bench.
Your Honor, my client is an upstanding member of the Trantorian community. He is a former First Minister of stellar repute. He is a personal acquaintance of our Emperor, Aegis XIV. What possible benefit could Professor Selden derive from attacking innocent young people? He is one of the most vocal proponents of stimulating the intellectual creativity of Trantorian youth. His psychohistory project employs numerous student volunteers. He is a beloved member of the Streeling University faculty. Further, here Novker paused, sweeping his gaze around the packed courtroom, as if to say, wait till you hear this. You will be ashamed that you ever, for a second, doubted the veracity of my client's claims. Professor Selden is one of the very few private individuals officially allied with the prestigious Galactic Library. He has been granted unlimited use of library facilities for work on what he calls the Encyclopedia Galactica, a veritable paean to imperial civilization. I ask you, how can this man even be questioned in such a matter?
With a flourish of his arm, Novker gestured toward Selden, who was sitting at the defendant's table with Stetton Palver, looking decidedly uncomfortable. Harry's cheeks were flushed from the unaccustomed praise. After all, lately his name was the subject of derisive snickers rather than flowery plaudits. And his hand shook slightly on the carved handle of his trusty cane. Judge Lee gazed down at Selden, clearly unimpressed.
What benefit indeed, Counselor? I have been asking myself that very question. I've lain awake these past nights, racking my brains for a plausible reason. Why would a man of Professor Selden's stature commit unprovoked assault and battery, when he himself is one of our most outspoken critics of the so-called breakdown of civil order? And then it dawned on me. Perhaps in his frustration at not being believed, Professor Selden feels he must prove to the worlds that his predictions of doom and gloom really are coming to pass.